It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. The barbershops, as you can tell, are still closed in the Scepter Dial, but not for long, Jules.
One week. 1 week to go.
International break is over. Club football's back. A lot of stuff going on Saturday. We've got a lot to get through.
Yeah.
But let's start at Arsenal against Liverpool, because it wasn't long ago that the narrative was, oh, well, Liverpool, they keep losing at home. Wheels are coming off. The injuries, blah, blah, blah. And we were praising Arsenal because Arteta and blah, blah, blah. And now, all of a sudden, they go and they get the rear end handed to them. Now, is this just because, and I say this for everybody, I don't want to make excuses, but international break finishes Wednesday. You have 2 days to prepare. Saturday, you're on the pitch. If you're a manager, it's kind of like finger in the wind stuff.
In terms of team selection, you mean?
Yeah, for both teams. Like, I'm not, it's hard to judge people on this, is it?
No, but... but still, I think Liverpool had a strong game plan, which they do away from home. They've been good. They were good at West Ham. They were good at Spurs. They were good against Leipzig in what was two away games, really. But they pressed well. They certainly looked like they wanted it far more than Arsenal and the Arsenal players.
You were there. Was it a 4-2-4 that we saw? Or was it... because on television, it wasn't immediately apparent to me.
So when Jota comes on in the second half, it's a 4-2-4. Klopp called Salah on. Jota is about to come on, and he clearly says to Salah, I will have the two, and then I will have the four of you. I think with Firmino, the one who dropped a little bit more, but the four of you with Jota clearly central. So Salah played on the right, Mane on the left, and Firmino and Jota played centrally with, again, Firmino a bit deeper. But yeah, that was the idea. And that changed the game. Liverpool were really good and they were the better side before. Although apart from the Milner show in the first half, not really creating any clear chances. But Jota changed everything. I think the Arsenal defence were completely lost on what was coming at them with those four up front. And Firmino dropping in between spaces was very difficult for them to handle and pick. And then the three goals came just beam like this.
I was struck by the fact, and it's not a knock on Milner, obviously. He's one of the fittest guys out there. You know, when juxtaposed with his age, and you figured in that midfield three against this Arsenal team, you know, I thought it made sense. Play him. He's got the experience. He's fit. He's obviously been training. But equally, I just thought in terms of energy and how well they could press Arsenal in the first half, and Arsenal were poor, I thought that you can really tell the difference when he's in there.
Yeah.
Just in terms of getting around the pitch compared to, you know, whatever, Fabinho, Wijnaldum, Henderson, or whatever you think or Thiago, whatever you think the best three is.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say Fabinho makes such a big... I mean, like, I've seen a lot of Liverpool games in the stadium from really low as well, almost like behind the benches. And when he's not there and when he's there, the difference is unreal, Gab. I promise you. And, I don't think he would become a legend as a defensive midfielder, but he's just so good. Everybody else around him, they know much more what to do, when to start the press, when to everybody goes. He's just so good for them. And I think Milner fits really well with Fabinho next to him.
One thing that struck me afterwards was Mikel Arteta. This is a bad performance.
Yeah.
He goes out and he says it's his fault. There's quite a contrast in the sense other managers point out flaws in the players. I could have pointed out a lot of flaws in these players.
Yeah.
Partey, Ceballos in the middle of the park, Alba. You know, people like Alba, you're supposed to be rested, right, after the international break?
He went, you know, with his national team, but he came back and...
But he came back on Monday, no?
Yeah.
So,
earlier.
What do we think of Arteta taking all the responsibility? Does it actually damage you? And I mean, are there times when you have to do it and times when... Oh boy, what is it? Was it Arteta's fault?
Yeah, I think he could have done better in terms of team selection and certainly the setup and the tactics.
Let's remind yourself, no Saka, no Emil Smith Rowe, no Granit Xhaka, and no David Luiz. But equally, should you take responsibility for it? Or could you just
say... Yeah, I like it. I like the fact that he said, you know what, I got it wrong. Diego Simeone said the same after Atleti's defeat. And I like it when your team loses and it's on you because you make wrong choices, which can happen to any manager. You prepare for a game, you think this is the way we can attack and defend, and it doesn't work out, it's on you. and on your players, but it's also on you.
If he'd made the right choices in this game,
yeah,
Liverpool would have still won. Yeah,
they were on another level, I have to say.
All right, Jules, I want to hit this Alexander Arnold trope because, or try Alexander Arnold piece. That sounds more professional, doesn't it? All right, here's the thing: he's having a really poor season.
Yeah,
although he was outstanding against Arsenal. Issues with his defending and whatever. Gareth Southgate decides not to call him up. I presume, in fact, I know that Gareth Southgate rings him up and explains why he's not being called. I'm also going to assume that Southgate is also, you know, didn't tell him, oh, look, Trent, you're terrible now. You have no chance of being in my squad for the Euros. He probably said, was encouraging, why don't you, you know, get fit, whatever, get your head right. I would have thought Jurgen Klopp's are like, yeah, excellent. I get Trent here for 2 weeks. I can work with him. I can rebuild his confidence, right?
Yeah, but no, because Trent was devastated. So for Klopp,
but how though? I don't. Well, he was devastated. I mean, we know this thing that he was devastated is right, because Klopp told us that he's devastated.
Yeah, Klopp's reaction can only be because Trent was really hurt by the fact that he was dropped for England by
Southgate. But this doesn't add up.
Why?
Because. All right, listen, maybe I'm putting too much thought into this, but to me it's a big deal because Trent Alexander-Arnold, for me, is one of England's, I don't want to say three most important players, although he probably is. I mean, in terms of what he can give you going forward in both ways and whatever, and the level he was at. So Southgate, we have this image of him as being this wonderfully nurturing guy. I mean, even people who don't think Gareth Southgate is a great manager, they will concede that in terms of man management, PR, public thing, he's very good.
Yeah.
And you assume that he was extremely kind and nurturing to Alexander Arnold. Because he's not an idiot, I also assume that he hasn't decided that Trent Alexander Arnold has no future with England either, right?
Yeah.
So he would have softened the blow as much as he could have, right?
Yeah, it's not the Ronald Koeman with Suarez from Koeman.
Exactly. Yeah. Jurgen Klopp, also another guy who we kind of see as a nice guy, right?
Yeah.
And while obviously he understands players of international careers, it suits him to have Trent Alexander-Arnold, with so many games coming up, so many important games, stay at home, right?
Yeah.
And yet then the news comes out that Trent Alexander-Arnold is devastated. And I'm thinking to myself, why are you devastated? Assuming Southgate didn't close the door on him. Why is he devastated that he didn't go?
It doesn't matter, I think, if he closed the door on him. You're right, Southgate probably said, listen, if you work hard, if you play well, you might still go to the Euros. Although Southgate probably also told him, this is a highly competitive position that you're playing in with Trippier, with Reece James, with Kyle Walker, with Wan-Bissaka, with Max Aarons. Give me all those English 11s of right backs that English people love doing, okay?
Right.
But it doesn't matter. Trent, 3 weeks ago, Trent was convinced that he was going to go to the Euros, would fight for a starting place there, that if I told you, okay, who do you think could be dropped by Southgate for this England squad, you would have never said Trent. No one would have said Trent.
No, because it was
so imagine his shock when he gets a phone call, sees Southgate's name on his phone, and he knew straight away this is not good news because Southgate doesn't call you if he then calls you up. He calls you only because he's not going to call you up. And I think when you're that young and you know already that it's been a bit tough for you this season, although you were getting back to a better level, and I just think it hurts. I think it hurts to be dropped like that. I think it hurts not to go away. You left pretty much on your own at the training ground. Yeah, it's a good thing, but everybody else has gone with the national team.
Nat Phillips is around.
Yeah, Nat Phillips. Okay, Bobby Firmino as well, because we're not playing. But do you see what I mean? I think that hurts players a lot when everybody goes with their countries and then you're there at the training ground. There's five of you. You do rondos all day. And like
We all know this, but we also presume that Southgate knows this. It would be very un-Southgate-like to have gotten this wrong. Let me put it this way. Some players, they wouldn't have cared because you're saying, we're playing three Muppet teams, we'll get 9 points, I'll be back. Other players were taken differently. And I think when you go and you break bad news, you have to know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
Southgate generally has always gotten this part right. That's why I'm surprised that he got it wrong. And equally, I'm surprised that Klopp called him out on it. Because this is a story that you could have easily, Klopp could have simply said, yeah, he was, you know, he really wanted to be with England, but you know, he came back and he showed his quality, a tremendous game, move on, right? Klopp could have said that.
Yeah, but Klopp thinks that he's better than the other three, right? Otherwise, you don't react like this.
Okay. Who doesn't think he's better than the other guys?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because, you know, clearly what Klopp wanted to say was like, hang on, are you kidding me? Have you picked Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier and Reece James ahead of Trent Alexander-Arnold, who is... And I think Klopp was right to defend his player and go like, I don't get this. It doesn't make any sense. Why did you drop him? What, you didn't think that he could bring this and this to your team? I thought that was great. And I think more managers should do it because... If you disagree with some of the choices that a national team head coach makes, for example, and you don't have to go at war with him and saying, oh, he's rubbish, he's this. Just say, like, I don't understand. What's the justification? How can you justify not calling Alexander-Arnold up for those three games? Well, because of his latest performances, but he showed before the international break that he was getting much better. There was much better performances than we saw maybe, let's say, between December and February.
Look, we don't know the conversation between Southgate and Walker. Southgate and Trent. Had I been in Southgate's position, and this is what I think he would have told them, it's what I would have told them, I would have said, listen, there's a lot of competition for the right back position. Mm-hmm. The only guy who can come close to doing what you do is Reece James. Yeah. You're well ahead of Reece James in terms of experience and in terms of quality. So I'm not going to call you this time because you're going to the Euros. It's as simple as that. And, you know, unless you get injured or you fall off a cliff, even though you've not had a bad season, when you're on top of your game, you're the best right back I have. And then you make a decision. And then and you say, I want to get a good, long, hard look at my other right back options. I don't get to see Trippier as much because he's in Spain, and I want to see whether Reece James can play in a four, and Walker maybe is going to be my center back. Yeah, I know. But if you say that, if you explain this to him, he shouldn't be devastated. He should be fine. This is the part I don't understand.
Gab. I think he hurt so badly to be dropped that way, and I would think that Trent thinks he's better than the other three. So he goes like, I don't understand why
he is better than the other three. But you know what should hurt him more is rewatching some of his performances early this year. That should hurt him more.
Yeah, no.
If the guy says that. You're going to the Euros because I believe in you, that should not hurt him in the same way. That's the part
that was
I don't
said.
Get.
There's no way Southgate said, I'm dropping you for this, which is the last games before the list is announced, the squad is announced for the Euros. So you just imagine, this is not like you're not going to have more
But if you
games.
Tell him you're on the list unless you're injured.
But he can't be on the list because he was dropped. Yeah,
he said, I'm not calling you now, but I will call you for the Euros. But that's what a sane person does.
The March international break before a big competition, 85, even maybe 90% of the players in those squads goes to the Euros. So
in normal circumstances, yes. In the COVID season, I don't know.
Other
squads called up 35, 38 players for this, right?
Yeah, well, your boy Mancini and Roberto Martinez. The others kept
it
too lower.
And I think we can take it as read that there's not going to be it hasn't been confirmed yet. There's not going to be 23-man squads.
I know, but
there's going to be 25 or 28-man squads at the Euros,
true.
And rightly so.
But if you drop for the last squad before the
Not if the guy tells you you're still going to go.
But you can't say that to him.
Why not?
Because if Trent is dreadful between March and May, he's not going to take him. He's going to take the other three, especially if they played better. If Kyle Walker wants the quadruple, he's on that plane. If Kieran Trippier...
Kyle Walker's on that plane because he can play centre-back in a three. That's
Kieran
why
Trippier
he's there.
Has more caps and more international experience than Trent.
So you put Walker with the centre-backs because there aren't that many good ones,
You take three right-backs. You take two right-backs. So even if you take Walker as a centre-back, then he's two out of... Reece James, Trent, and Trippier. Trippier is there 100%. So then he's between Trent and Reece.
I don't think Trippier is there 100%.
Yeah, 100%. Wow. Just for set piece quality. Yeah, he's there. He was there in 2018, played big part, played all the games as a starter. That's why I think, I think this is a great debate, but that's why I think when Trent's are missing out on the last squad before the squad for the Euros is announced.
It's all down to the communication. Obviously, I think there was a communication breakdown. And I'll tell you what.
You would be devastated.
If Gareth Southgate think that even if you explain it the way I explained it to Trent and he takes it badly, then you call him. It's as simple as that. You know,
yeah.
Bring him along if you think he can't handle it. I just thought this whole thing was a bit surprising. Let's talk about the race for top four.
Yeah.
Because we have Chelsea on 51 points. We have Spurs, Liverpool, and West Ham on 49 points. West Ham have a game in hand. They play Wolves on Monday evening. We're taping this on a Monday. Yeah. So Wolves, West Ham could actually leapfrog Chelsea if they finish top four. If they win tonight. And as you correctly pointed out, and I'm sorry, I was letting my hatred for Carlo Ancelotti clearly bleed through.
Yeah, we know your
Everton have 146 points, but they have two games in hand.
Yeah.
They win those games in hand. They're fourth.
They are.
This is a big mess.
It is a big mess, which is great because Chelsea's defeat, and we will talk about it in quick hits anyway, just almost blew this title race. Over again, we thought they were so solid. We thought, you know, they were 5 points clear, and there was a lot of teams between them and Liverpool, for example, and they had that cushion. But now, it's just like, why? They will have to play Man City, Chelsea. Chelsea will also have to play Arsenal and Leicester. Okay, Arsenal, maybe not so much.
I think Arsenal and Leicester. I always look at this, and I always look at, all right, what teams, especially the season we have. We were talking about teams being on the beach in May. The teams you don't want to play at that stage are teams that are fighting to avoid relegation.
Yeah.
And Chelsea do have... They have a game against Fulham, which could be a big pain in the butt. They have a game against Brighton, which could be a big pain in the butt. They have a game against West Ham, which is a six-pointer, if you put it that way.
Yeah, you're right, because...
These other guys, Palace, Villa, I mean...
Arsenal would have nothing to play. City would be champions for the one. Leicester probably would be top four guaranteed when you come to the game against Chelsea, when you come to the game against Spurs, which is the last game of the season. So there's... You're right. You have to take that in consideration. For Liverpool, you play Newcastle, you play West Brom, you play Burnley, you play Palace. Well, Palace not so much.
I think Burnley and Palace will probably be safe by the time they play. Liverpool don't have a bad run in. They do have United away.
But they will have the Champions League.
But they have. And so will Chelsea.
Yeah, so will Chelsea.
But I think the big thing with Liverpool is that they don't have head-to-heads, so they're not in a position where they can control their destiny at all. I think that's a big one. In fact, the only head-to-heads between these teams, if I'm reading this correctly, is West Ham, who of course hosts Chelsea. I look at West Ham's run-in, it's not easy because they do have a lot of teams that are fighting to, you know, they're competing for something. Spurs, we haven't mentioned them. Come on, it's Mourinho.
Yeah, it is.
He's going to make it. He can make it.
He can make it. Of course he can make it.
I mean, I look at Spurs, right? United at home, no problem, 3 points in the bag. I'm kidding. But I guess what I'm saying is Spurs could turn around very quickly. You have United at home next. You've got Everton away.
True.
Who, those two games, I think, will depart. You get two losses in those games, given the climate around the club as well. I think it becomes very, very tricky to turn around.
Yeah, but you don't win against United and Everton, and suddenly it's crisis again, and you can fall so
quickly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, eighth in the table, and they're so unpredictable that.
All right,
which I think makes this race so unpredictable. You can't say anymore. Okay, Chelsea was solid, or this and that.
I'm going to remind myself, or you might know off the top of my head, so I won't need to look at my phone. But how far ahead are Leicester? There's no way they're getting sucked back in, right?
I don't think so.
It's 5 points.
Yeah, 5 points.
And Leicester do have a number of head-to-heads. Chelsea and Spurs.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's assume Leicester are safe. That leaves one slot. I think we need to play the percentage game now.
Ooh!
Now, you wanted to include Aston Villa because there's some scenario where they win all their games in hand and Jack Grealish returns and turns into Godzilla.
And Trezeguet is actually David Trezeguet and comes in and scores big goals.
Exactly. Know? Okay, without upsetting Villa fans, can we rule Villa out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Villa.
All right. So, can you work out the percentages in your head?
This is really hard.
All right. I will start to make it easy. I'm going to say Chelsea, 50%.
Yeah.
Because I think two points matter because of their run-in. I'm going to go Liverpool, 30%.
Yeah.
I'm going to go West Ham. I'm going to go Spurs 15%.
Yeah.
Because those head-to-heads matter. I'll go West Ham 4%. And I'll go Everton 1%.
Okay.
That adds up to 100, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, I go Chelsea 40% because 2 points lead, you're right, it's important, but what I saw on Saturday was so bad in many ways, and again we will talk about it later in quick hits, so make sure you listen as well, that I'm not really sure anymore of how solid they can be, how much that defeat against West Brom could derail the end of the season a little bit and could almost bring the doubt into them. Let's say, imagine they only draw against Porto in midweek in the Champions League, which wouldn't be a bad result, but still.
And screws turn.
You know, and start, so 40% Chelsea, 30% Liverpool, because I think from what I saw on Saturday, if they can sort out their home form, and eventually it will, they could be having a very good end of the season. And then I go 20% Spurs, because it's Mourinho, because it's Harry Kane, and Harry Kane can take this team and take it to fourth place with some incredible performances. And then West Ham 10%. Zero for Carlo, I'm sorry, because I there's too much inconsistency.
You brought there. Him up, the yeah, game's in hand.
Because technically they can, but no, they can't. Right. So, and West Ham 10% because, as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the way they play, but they've done amazing this season, so it's still possible. Although it's a really long shot. So yeah, 40, 30, 20, 10 is good for me.
There you go. Plenty of excitement left. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Top of the table clash in Ligue 1, Paris Saint-Germain against Lille. Great chance for Paris Saint-Germain, get 3 points in the bag, kind of get some confidence ahead of the big midweek clash against Bayern. Didn't work out that way, Jules, and Pochettino haters, and there are some, believe it or not, point out, oh, look, he's never won anything. Is there some kind of weirdo curse or what?
Well, he's won the French Community Shield. Which he was the manager when they did it, when they beat Marseille. Okay. So that's a trophy.
I think that has a big Tuchel on it. But anyway,
but
yeah.
Still, I don't think it's got something to do with his lack of trophies or anything like this.
No, how did they take the pitch and like they lost 1-0?
Yeah,
but it seemed like every time, even after going every time the counter, whether it was Ikone or Jonathan David or whatever. Every time they kept slicing through there.
Yeah, yeah. And although Lille had only one shot on target until the 75th minute or whatever, which was the goal early in the first half after 20 minutes, they were so good. They were so good tactically. They were so well organized. They knew exactly how to prevent PSG from creating anything. Although PSG had a couple of decent chances in the first half, even at 0-0, there's one good shot from Mbappe that Maignan saved. There's the volley by Neymar that goes wide. But it was not enough, and they got into Neymar's head. They kept Mbappe quiet. They defended well in numbers. They were very intelligent and efficient in the way they did.
There's no Marco Verratti, which of course.
So that's the big loss. And Pochettino can say as much as he wants, we're inconsistent, which is true. They're capable of great things, as we saw in Barcelona, in Lyon, and some really very, very average performances like on Saturday. But not having Verratti is a huge blow because he's such a big part, maybe the most important part in what Pochettino is trying to do, much higher up on the pitch, more central as well, that when he's not there, the lack of creativity is horrendous.
Neymar gets 2 yellow cards, both reaction fouls, right? One where he puts his hand on the other guy's
face.
That could
have been red.
Which was a different if it could have been red. The second one at the end where they're arguing over a loose ball and he pushes him, right?
I don't know what to say anymore because you've been a professional player now for more than 10 years. You know you're the most fouled player, whatever. You can't do that. Mm. What does Pochettino say to him? What is his problem?
So the problem in this game is the lack of match fitness. So he got injured on February the 10th. Hadn't played apart from 20 minutes at Lyon before the international.
The lack of match fitness is what makes him go and have these hissy fits where he gets himself sent off.
The lack of match fitness gap, which is always the same when he comes back from an injury, is like he's not good in the game because he lacks fitness in terms of acceleration with the ball. He can't do what he usually does. So he gets really frustrated, with himself, and he doesn't hide because he still asks for the ball and still tries, but he gets highly frustrated that he can't make the difference like he usually does. Then if the team is losing, if the team is winning, he's usually fine. But then if on top of that, the team is losing, and in a big game like this, I think he starts losing it in the sense like, you know, this is the kind of games that I'm supposed to win for this team. And he doesn't.
I think this difficult to accept because I think of the amount of pressure that Neymar has been under since the time he was 16, 17 years old.
Yeah.
The fact that he's a household name, all the time that he spent in Brazil and whatever. I would have thought that after a decade, more than that, because he's what, 28 now?
29.
29 even. You develop mechanisms to channel this. Even when you come back, he gets injured every year, right?
Yeah,
so he's
got
to be used to coming back from injury, match fitness. And you realize that you can't do stuff like this. You can't. I'm not saying he cost the team the game.
No.
He tried when he was out there, but what do you do if you're Pochettino?
If you're someone like him, and usually I dribble past you just like this, okay? But in this game, because I haven't played for 2 months, really, right. Not at all, I've only trained for 10 days, I can't dribble you. And that really, really frustrates me. That's what happened to him.
Okay,
usually
fine,
those league players,
this
he goes like this, bam, bam.
This happens to other players who get injured and come back. It's happened to him when he got injured and he comes back. You learn to process it. You say, I can't do it because I'm not as sharp, I'm not as match fit. I'm going to find other ways to help the team. He's actually a pretty unselfish guy and a good teammate in other ways.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing. And the other thing you realize, I'm not going to make it better by shoving somebody in the face.
No, it's true.
You know, I can accept it if you're 20 years old. I can't accept it if you're 29 and your Neymar.
Yeah. But I think he gets provoked and then he answers. He replied. So Frank Leboeuf on the ESPN FC show on Sunday night, for example, said that...
By the way, sorry, you're going to jump in there, mention Frank Leboeuf. Go to his social media, look at what Frank Leboeuf looks like with his shirt off.
Yeah, so...
In his early 50s.
So, yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, maybe he works hard in the gym.
Maybe a tiny bit worrying as well.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Yeah. No, we actually took the mickey of him last night for that photo where he's topless and, you know, it's like, yeah, go to the gym midnight. But he was saying, like, I'm hoping that Pochettino doesn't start Neymar against Bayern. And I was like, okay, but one, that's not going to happen. Two, he's still your best player. You know, it's Harry Kane has to start the Champions League final for Spurs, even if he's not fit,
he's not best player, not named Kylian, but yes.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Even over Kylian, he's... Okay, this is Neymar. Do you think he should not start? Do you think he will not start?
I think, again, you need to know your relationship with the player. If you think that he doesn't have 90 minutes, for example, if you think his state of mind is such that he can't come to terms with it, maybe... And you think he can handle coming off the bench and changing a game, then I think, yeah, you consider it. From what we know from the outside of Neymar, Neymar is frankly one of the most guarded people in the world. If he's not going to take it well, then you don't even consider it because that you've kind of signed your own sentence as a manager. Plus, the other thing is, if you don't play Neymar, what? I know you've got, you know, what do you do? Do you go Moise Kean, Mbappe, and...
Di Maria.
And Di Maria? Because there's no Icardi, right?
No Icardi.
I mean...
No Verratti, as we said. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, I think. But I'm in the sense that I think he will start and has to start. And he can still, not being much fit, win you the game anyway. And if you think that he could face Pavard or Zulu, I don't know, whoever going to play on that right-hand side for Bayern... Yeah, every day.
Sule, by the way, he done well. Sorry, just I know we'll foreshadow. I'll forget about it in the quick hit. I was always, you talked about the world's largest fullback and everything, and he moves well for a big man. There was that one chance in the second half for Leipzig where he did not sort out his feet.
The problem is, when you're that size and you make a mistake, you look really, really bad. You look a lot worse than an average-sized person making the exact same error. That's I just want to stick up for tall people everywhere.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's true. No, you're right. And, but just to finish on PSG and Neymar, it was disappointing from Neymar. Usually two yellows gets you one match ban, but because he's been sent off so many times, because there was the clash in the tunnel as well, because he wanted to have a fight with Thiago Diallo after the game as well. I fear
there was the Alvaro incident earlier this year.
Yeah,
as well.
Of course, the Marseille. But there's been another red card since too. And I just fear that it could be a 2 or 3 match ban, which would be terrible again for PSG, of course. But for his match fitness going into the second leg against Bayern, because that means you don't play again at the weekend at Strasbourg. So that match fitness that you're chasing and you need minutes, you won't have those minutes. He will play against Bayern less than 90 minutes. Then it's another week with no game, just training. Then you play Bayern again where he won't be match fit. It's impossible by just training. And then after that, even if PSG qualify, you might not play again the following week and the following week in the league because of that suspension you're going to get. So it was just terrible from start to finish. Mbappe with another dreadful game. It's happened too often this season, and you just think, wow, this is where we are.
Let's talk about the mystery of Lille, because I think it's remarkable at the top of the league. We've praised Galtier. They've had this ability to sign players, and this was put down to their Portuguese scout, whose name now
is Campos.
Yes, Luis Campos, who, as I understand it, also kind of has like his own. He's not quite a scout recruiter type. He's also more of a consultant type in the sense that he wears different hats and draw your own conclusions.
The club pays his company.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That said, he's brought them tremendous players who they've sold for a ton of money.
Yeah.
Pepe, Osimhen, Gabriel.
Yeah.
However, how are they so much in the hole?
It's hard to understand. Unless the first takeover of our friend João Lopez.
It was highly leveraged. He had to borrow money. But yeah.
I don't know. But certainly somewhere. So whether the debts were there before or João Lopez increased the debt to put that business plan together and the business model of getting those young players, having a lot of players under contract, by the way.
It's a very big squad.
It's a huge squad, and he's been for many years now since that business model started. Maybe that's part of the reason. The new stadium, the fans not being there, the training ground, I don't know. There's some way it doesn't add up, because you can't buy a player for 30 million like Osimhen, making almost 70 million euro profit, although it's paid in installment, but still, technically, because they sold him for 80 million to Napoli, and do more of those kind of transfers and operations and still be so much in debt and having so many financial issues.
The other thing that's remarkable to me is they bring in these younger players and then flip them and turn them around and develop them, and it's a tremendous job they do there. Equally, they also bring in Renato Sanchez, and who, you know, had flopped everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And he's a kind of signing, like, you know, we saw him go to Swansea. He's a kind of signing like, oh, look, he's a name brand. Everybody knows who he is because of his past. Oh, let's bring him in and have a go. You know, which is something we often see, often from teams in the Premier League. You buy the guy with a big rep when, in fact, he hasn't produced for one reason or another for the past 5 or 6 years. Burak Yılmaz, different category, and he's doing phenomenal, and we love him. But equally, the dude's 34, 35 years old. Why bring him in? That seems extremely short-termist on a club that's more about being long-term.
Yeah,
it's hard to reconcile everything that goes on there, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. For Yılmaz, they say we needed some experience up front, and the Turkish market has been very good for them. You know, Celik and Yazici have done really well. Who were findings? You know, second division in Turkey. Game for Celic, not for Yazici, but still, you know, so maybe there was a bit of that. Maybe there's work with some agents that very much
we'll give you this guy, but you got to take that dude too, which happens all the time. Yeah.
And for Renato, they said they've turned down already a few offers of over 50 million euros. So the idea was to relaunch his career.
So is it from his mom? Like, what?
I don't know. Because he cost them a lot in wages, that's for sure. They bought him for 20 million with the idea of let's relaunch his career. again, showcase his talent, because you don't, you're not the best young players at the Euro 2016 that you win if you're not talented. But we all know.
There's no question the ability is there. The question was, do you then, you know, he's still only, what, 24 years
of age? Yeah.
You know, do you say, what makes you think, and he's still on substantial wages.
Ah, huge.
So what makes you think that you're the right place to turn around?
In fairness, he's been very good to them. So maybe they will be able to sell him for a profit, which then you would say, oh, amazing, that's an amazing deal. But like I always say with this kind of model, and Monaco fell really, really low because of it at some point, is that there will be a point where the talent that you can bring in either take too long to flourish and then for you to sell. And if you don't sell one, if you don't have a good summer for your business model, that's when you get all the debts.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, but if they win the league, and they've been amazing this season, and certainly the most deservedly of the four that can still win the league in France, it'll be an incredible achievement. And Galtier especially, the manager who's been fantastic.
I want to ask you about final point on Galtier and the setup at Lille, because when Jose, and we'll tie it back to Mourinho, because we can never talk enough Mourinho.
Yeah.
Never talk enough Mourinho, never talk enough Haaland. When Mourinho took over, he signed two assistants, backroom dudes.
Yeah.
Obviously, get his divorce from Rui Faria. João Sacramento and the other dude whose name I can never remember. Can you?
No.
All right. João Sacramento.
But Sacramento was always the most important
friend.
Anyway.
Yeah. And he was. It's funny because when it comes to assistants and backroom people, right? We never quite know what these guys actually do. We never quite know who's good. No, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's got a great reputation. Sometimes you talk to the media, you know, informally, and say, oh, he's a really nice guy. He seems really smart. But then you wonder, why is he number two? Was it? People told me, like, oh, this is a huge blow to Lille. Oh, these two guys are so, especially Sacramento, so smart, so smart. Doesn't seem like they really missed him.
No. They've been better since he left anyway, both last season and this season. And it's not perfect.
It's not a knock on him. Let's just make it clear. It's
completely.
These guys are assistants for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got a great future. And we always also said that a lot of people underestimate the influence of an assistant in certain clubs, for sure. But in this case, Galtier, I think, who was very much always his own man anyway, has done an immense job with that squad. Even if at times they had little blips in form, we saw that in the Europa League, where I think they were in a group where they should have qualified, although it was a tough group with Milan and Celtic. But they should have gone through more than what they did, although they played Ajax then in the second round. But they've been fantastic, I have to be honest.
Percent chance that Lille become champions of France?
I think it's theirs now to lose, so I would say yeah, of course.
More than 50%.
So just over 50, 51. And then I'll have PSG and Monaco. Lyon, I think there's something wrong right there right now. So then it's PSG and Monaco with, I would give PSG more percentages than Monaco.
I would hope so.
Yeah, of course. But you go 51, 35, and
14.
Then,
there you go.
Right, yeah, you're amazing.
All right, enough Ligue 1. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Who needs Robert Lewandowski when you have Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting? Bayern win the big one in the Bundesliga and go 7 points clear. Jules, are we ready to crown them?
I think so, Gab. I mean, you and I wanted Leipzig and Nagelsmann to...
We were Team Julian.
I know we're Team Julian, but not this season. 7 points is too big now. And they were so solid. They were so clinical in many ways. Neuer with a big save in the second half where they were under pressure but didn't break. A good goal by Goretzka. Kimmich, Goretzka again were fantastic. And
Thomas Müller made that goal.
Yeah,
I mean, the way he slips away from Tyler Adams. I mean,
so good. And maybe it's a shame that we didn't have a full Bayern and a full Leipzig team on both ways to have an even better game. But they showed they're the boss.
But I think that's the difference. I worked it out, right? Bayern starting 11 had played 19 games in total over the international break.
Yeah.
And I said made 19 starts, rather.
Okay.
Leipzig had made 10 starts. You expected Leipzig to be fresher, more aggressive, and they tried to be, and Bayern just absorbed it all.
Just
except for that moment at the start of the second half where you had those chances, you had some bad finishes. I think Nagelsmann's right. This could have been a draw.
Yeah, it could have been.
But They saw it out.
It showed. And I would have liked Angelino to be there for Leipzig and, you know, and really to have a full team and go at Bayern. But I think Bayern were too solid anyway. Zinedine Zidane rest Toni Kroos and Raphael Varane while going with a back three at Real Madrid, beat Eibar 2-0 on Saturday. Gab, just what they needed ahead of the big game against Liverpool in the Champions League.
Nobody gets hurt. You get another 3 points in there. Onwards and upwards. Obviously, there's still no Sergio Ramos, and you know that's a big issue.
Big issue.
But I thought they looked good. It's still pretty minimalist. Still no Eden Hazard as well. Wild card potential.
Back training though.
But Marco Asensio scored a great goal. Benzema obviously had the other one. And maybe Asensio gives you that added value. This is going to be one of the most fascinating, delicately poised clashes of the round.
And Benzema has scored in each of his last 7 games in all competition, which he's never done before in his career. Talk about players who get better with age, you know, like a good French wine. And Karim is right up there, incredible form.
Not all French wines get better with age.
Well, the good ones.
Manchester United come from behind to beat... Oh, yeah, Frank Ribery got sent off at the weekend. That's why. Manchester United got come from behind to beat Brighton 2-1. Jules, Brighton probably should have had a penalty there.
Yeah, I thought so. Maybe Maguire and Welbeck that second half.
Maybe.
It was really, really, really kind from the referee.
Referee is our friend Mike Dean. No?
Yeah, of course, Mike Dean, who we really hope we don't see again next season. But United were really poor, I thought. Really, really poor, even in the second half. But you win these games on individualities, and individual players make the difference. Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford, Mason Greenwood, this is it. You know.
And they kept plugging away. And Greenwood,
yeah, but this is not a team win. Again, this is a win that you win because your players can have those moments of brilliance.
I had to say, on the VAR as well, this really bugged me, right? So afterwards, Graham Potter came out and he gave one of those explanations where he says, where he's kind of inviting you to read between the lines.
Yeah.
And he said, well, basically, if Mike Dean had given it, the VAR wouldn't have overturned it.
Yeah.
But because he didn't give it, the VAR didn't do anything. There's no way Mike Dean, who's all the way behind on the pitch, let him have another look.
Yeah.
You know, you're misinterpreting this clear and obvious thing. And again, we've seen this all season. And you know what? There's people who don't like VAR, and there's VAR issues everywhere. But nowhere have they turned it into a holy mess as they have this season.
Yeah,
as in the Premier League.
Tottenham Hotspur have to settle for a point away at Newcastle after allowing a late equaliser once more. Gab, what do you want to talk about? The defensive horror show that we saw from Spurs, the Toby Alderweireld COVID test mystery, or Jose Mourinho asked about his team's struggles compared to what he used to do in the past, where his teams used to be able to keep a lead, and him replaying same coach, different players, or all three if you want.
Like defensive horror show. Sorry, Tanganga, Roden,
Sanchez.
Davinson Sanchez, these guys aren't as good. And maybe this is what he's referring to, is when you have Ricardo Carvalho and John Terry, you have better defenders. But you know what? Again, you're choosing these guys. You're throwing these people on the bus. This ties in nicely as well with the Alderweireld thing, because he said Alderweireld wasn't available because his COVID test came in late, so he wasn't able to train on Friday, which is weird because, as our colleague Christophe Terreur, he sent out video, not secret video he filmed himself of dubious provenance, but video that was on Tottenham's official account, which shows the players supposedly training on Friday, and you can see Alderweireld there training. Maybe it was his lookalike, maybe it was Kate Winslet, I don't know. But it's not good, it's not a good look.
You put trust
in him and say, like, look, if you throw them under the bus, you want to get the right reaction. Maybe that's what he's getting. But, man, you just gave up 2 points to freaking Newcastle.
I know. And it's not his fault again, is it? Although he could have made a defensive change when they were 2-1 up with 10 minutes to go, and he didn't. But no, same coach, different players.
Brought in Bale to get the equaliser with 2 minutes to go.
I would say different players and different coach too. I'm sorry. This is not the Jose Mourinho of all that we know.
Atletico Madrid fall to Sevilla 1-0. This means Real Madrid are just 3 points back in Barcelona. If they win Monday night, could be a single point back.
Ooh.
Jules, I Liga, as they say. Legit title race.
Yeah, there's been for a few weeks though, Gab. But I didn't... it's not that I didn't see this one coming. I just didn't think Atletico could be that all over the place. What was the tactic? No one could tell you. What was the tactics? What was the setup? They looked all lost on that pitch. And you know, we talked about Mourinho's substitution, but Cholo Simeone said, I made a mistake, it was wrong. He changed everything after half an hour when Lodi came off. But even in the second half, bringing Kondogbia on for Lema, when it's 0-0, I'm like, what are you doing? He's lost it completely.
I don't want to go so far as that, but I think he overthought it. And
it was ridiculous.
And, you know, and Lopetegui had never beaten Simeone before, and people made a big deal out of that. Lopetegui generally stuck to his guns, stuck to his players, and said, let's execute better. And Atleti had no answers.
Definitely. And it's a goal right back cross for left back finish that Jurgen Klopp would have been really proud of. Ugly scenes in Cadiz on Sunday, Gab, where Valencia's Mukhtar Diakabi was substituted after telling the referee that he was racially abused by Juan Cala, the Cadiz defender. Valencia decided to leave the pitch with Diakabi, and then the game was suspended for around 20 minutes and then restarted. Just before you give
us your
opinion.
Without
Diakabi as well, yeah.
Who was substituted.
What I think is the right reaction from Valencia and the players to decide, you know, we can't stand for this, we're walking out because this is unacceptable. Diakabi was clearly distraught. Where I was really disappointed with, though, was I thought this was a great opportunity for La Liga to say, you know what, Valencia, we're with you. We cannot stand for more racial abuse anymore on the pitch, whether it's from another player, from the fans, from anywhere. Let's stop that game now. Let's have an investigation, and then we can replay the last hour. We can replay, I don't know, anything. And instead, if you listen to what Jose Gaya, the Valencia left back, said, he said, well, they almost forced us to go back. Otherwise, we would have lost the game. And forfeit it.
So I think this is the most important point, and I agree with you 100%. I don't think this is on the referee. The referee does have the power to stop the game. But frankly, the referee says, and he's right, I applied the protocol in the sense that this guy says he's being racially abused. Nobody else, none of my assistants heard it. Kala denies it. In those circumstances, I can't stop the game. I can't suddenly stop the game and do an investigation on the pitch.
Yeah.
That he doesn't have the authority to do that, right? La Liga does. And I would expect La Liga to be watching the game and said, we can't treat this like something else. This is something that's very, very serious.
Yeah.
And what struck me was, you know, the instruction, again, that Javi Gracia came out and said, we were told that if we didn't come back onto the pitch, we would forfeit the game. And Diakabi saying, okay, then please, guys, go back out onto the pitch. Obviously, Diakabi not in the right state of mind to go back on the pitch. He was substituted. You know, that instruction should not have come.
Yeah.
Like, that is the instruction on the rule book. You can't just walk away from the game, right? That is the basic instruction. But this is a special circumstance. And I think what should have happened here, somebody high up in La Liga should have said, I'm sorry, you know, even though it's Easter, take a little break. Take an interesting situation. The match is going up around the world, and say, no, let's stop this now.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, somebody should have shown that leadership. In terms of what happened, one other thing I want to say too, people have made an analogy with players being racially abused by fans, and, you know, we've had people threatening to walk off the pitch and whatever. And this is completely different.
Yeah.
Because it's easier for a team to do so when you're being racially abused by fans, because, and by the way, I think the first team that does it will be praised, and rightly so, because everybody can hear it. Here, it's a conversation between two people, right? If Diakabi doesn't report it, nobody knows that it ever happened, apart from Diakabi and Kala. So the referee can't take action on his own. And I think it's important.
So,
the one other thing I want to point out, because I know that some people are going to make this argument, and it's a stupid, stupid argument. The idea that, well, but it's one man's word against another, so people might, if you start stopping games for it, people might start reporting that they're being racially abused.
Well, so you would make up that you were racially abused. Like, who would do that?
These are the same Muppets who think that you might use concussion substitutions that way. Oh, but, you know, seriously, this is going to be your strategy, right? You get some player of color to go up. Oh, Lionel Messi just racially abused me. Let's stop the game. Come on, man.
Yeah.
This is absolutely ridiculous, right? Diakabi's played professional football for more than 10 years, right? I don't know if he's been racially abused before, but he certainly has never complained about an opponent doing it to him during a game. Clearly, he's distraught. Clearly, he feels something was said. It doesn't mean you don't investigate Kala fully and give him a chance to explain himself, but it does mean you have to take action.
So unless all of a sudden this becomes something where everybody goes out and starts making stuff up, which is not the case, there's no evidence of this whatsoever, you cannot use that as a reason not to stop the game.
Definitely.
This is entirely on the league, in my opinion, and obviously on Kala.
Yeah.
Now, we were all praising Chelsea's defensive progress under Thomas Tuchel, and then they lose 5-2 at home to second-bottom West Brom. And, Jules, so many things confuse me. Jorginho's performance, which wasn't good, and I know people love to scapegoat him, but that was a bad game. The Pulisic injury?
Tuchel said that it was a groin injury, wasn't it? And that it could explode or something like this.
I don't understand. So the guy plays the first half, right? Scores a goal.
Yeah, pretty well.
And then he's jogging out at halftime, and before he gets to the first cone, he pulls up. How does that?
I don't know. I really don't know. That baffled me. So many things baffled me in that game, Gab. As you said, Jorginho, if you go down to 10 men, you don't want Jorginho in your team because obviously the lack of mobility when you a man short could be a problem, especially if you're going to attack and be left exposed defensively. I didn't understand why Christensen came on for Ziyech. I didn't understand so many things in the team selection.
He wanted to keep the shape of the back three. That's why he brought Christensen on for Ziyech.
But yeah, but go to a back four for a game like this, play 4-4-1, and that's it. You know, why would you go back to a back three when you're down to 10 and you won it up? It made no sense. What he did in his team selection made no sense. Substitution made no sense. The defensive horror show made no sense. I mean, Thiago Silva, who, by the way, that's not a record he would want, but became the oldest player ever to be sent off in the Premier League at 36 and 190 days or whatever.
Yeah. Paging Phil Jagielka. Come on, you can beat him.
But how can he make two challenges like this in the first half hour of a game? It's beyond me.
It's an experience, Jules.
But yeah, so listen, bad games and off days happen in football for everyone. This was the first one for Tuchel. Let's hope for him that it doesn't happen too often.
Bit of love for Big Sam?
Come on.
Come on.
Right.
From
next
Mateus
one.
Pereira? No? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Manchester City made it 25 wins out of the last 26 games in all competition by beating Leicester 2-0. Gab, Pep Guardiola also gave us a new look.
Yeah, remember back when we said, oh, Pep is so inflexible, he has no plan B, blah, blah, blah. He completely changed it against Leicester. And I guess it was also the international break players coming back. But remember we said, like, oh, you know, he likes playing with no strikers in some games.
Right.
We saw Jesus and Aguero out there together. And we saw, I mean, I don't know if Fernandinho and Rodri, I don't believe they've started together. I mean, maybe they have before, but it totally makes sense, right?
Yeah.
You're going to play a team that counterattacks very, very well. And look, I'm not saying Leicester are just a counterattacking team, but when they have key players missing, that's what they do really, really well. So look, I'll just put these two guys out there so that they can tactically foul. If I get caught, I can still push my fullbacks up. I've got two... You know, Jesus obviously starting from a wide position, but coming inside. And he played it brilliantly. And, you know, fully deserved 2-0 win. And, you know, again, a different Pep. Pep evolves. Romelu Lukaku scores as Inter beat Bologna 1-0, with Milan dropping points there, now 8 clear with a game in hand. Title race over?
It's over, Gab. It was such an Inter-esque, Conte-esque, Lukaku-esque performance like we've seen really in recent weeks, even when they create chances and stuff. Those 1-0 win, they're solid, they're good.
I really didn't like it either.
I don't think
Conte liked it either. All he liked about it was the points.
But there was a point where he had to evolve in the sense that they were considered late goals and late chances, and they could not do that. They could not afford it. Now they're going to win the league by what? Winning the last three games or four games 1-0. No.
I don't know. Sassuolo coming up soon.
Come on. Right. Juventus, though, are held 2-2 in the derby by Torino. Gab, we saw some huge individual mistakes. And now even the top four finish is in question, I guess.
Finished 2-2. I think there should have been a penalty. De Ligt on Belotti.
Yeah.
Kulusevski, horrendous. Horrendous error.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I know it's not Pirlo's fault, the mistakes, but surely the environment around this dressing room can't be...
Well, I'll tell you one other story, which I think to some degree has been slightly underreported. You know, we always had our Covidiot watch.
Yeah.
Weston McKennie, Archer. Okay, Dybala's a different issue because he's always injured, but breaking COVID rules by having a party at McKennie's apartment.
On Wednesday?
I find this very difficult because, I mean, I've never met Weston McKennie personally, but we've heard him speak and stuff. He's an intelligent, he's an erudite guy. I'm just going to chalk it up to youth and say, you know, you done screwed up. Let's move on. And I'm not saying with McKennie and Arthur they would have won this game, but it does speak to a certain unraveling at the club. And they have a huge game on Wednesday against against Napoli. You lose that game, you're out of the top four. And then it's uphill, and the screws are turning, and then it gets really, really ugly.
Yeah.
Eintracht Frankfurt beat Borussia Dortmund 2-1 in a Champions League six-pointer, or at least a Champions League top four places six-pointer. This was really ugly, again, from Dortmund.
Bad. So, I mean, they can't defend for their own lives. It's just, I'm finding baffling at that level. I mean,
what about the goalkeeper? The first goal with Nico Schultz?
Did they have a goalkeeper even? Like, what's going on?
Vips or Berkey makes no difference.
Everything. It was just so bad. And the 7 points behind now. And I'm sorry. If on top of the defensive horror show, I mean, we use horror show a lot today. If Haaland is quiet, if you don't really create much for him, he had a few opportunities, I guess. But I thought Frankfurt defended well on him. And if he doesn't bail you out, there's nothing else. And I was sad to see that. And I think Man City could be a walk in the park for them on Tuesday night. And I don't know. It's just so much talent in that team. And yet they're so dreadful at times.
You didn't like Rafael Guerrero playing in the hole? I thought, it's just, what?
Why? There were so many things wrong.
It wasn't one other thing about Dortmund. You know, for so long, right? Okay, we in the media, we get lazy. We sort of, oh, Borussia Dortmund, they're such a well-run club. Those guys are so smart. Look at all the young talent they assemble. Yeah, okay. So, and Pep had a little dig about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they assemble. They pay agents a lot of money to bring them a lot of young talent, right? I don't know if that's true. But, yeah, assembling young talent, praiseworthy, very important. That's only part of your job. The other part of your job is setting a culture at the club, appointing the right manager.
Yeah.
Right, not creating this lame duck situation with Lucien Favre, and then a double lame duck situation with Edin Terzic, where you know the guy's just a placeholder. Fine,
we said from the beginning.
But now he's got even less authority than before. Plus, he's not doesn't seem to be particularly good.
No.
I think those guys believe their own hype a little bit too much. Focus on the fact that you're a million points behind Bayern, you're seven behind Eintracht Frankfurt, and honestly, they need to take another look. Marco Rose isn't going to fix everything single-handedly.
No.
It's going to take a lot more than that.
Definitely. Talking about Haaland, Team Haaland continued their roadshow from Barcelona to Madrid to London. So why is Mino Raiola tweeting about fake news, Gab?
I was wondering about this because you can't tweet about fake news if you're traveling very, very publicly around the world with your friend Alfie and letting everybody know your movements almost hour by hour. No, what he's upset about is all those stories that have appeared, like, oh, look, he's doing this so he can negotiate a bigger agent commission for himself. Look, I'm sure Mino Raiola is going to negotiate the best possible deal for himself. But equally, the fact that he's there with Haaland's dad suggests that maybe they're also going to do what they think is best for Haaland and his career.
Definitely.
And we've said this before. We both think that he's not going to move this summer because it doesn't really make much sense. But it doesn't mean that you can't go around, you can't talk to people, you can't go and figure out what's happening. And the fact that you're doing this so publicly, by the way, it helps Borussia Dortmund. Because if Borussia Dortmund are desperate to cash in on him this summer, if you can create this, you can create pressure from the outside, hey, Real Madrid, why aren't we making an extra effort for Haaland or Man City or whatever?
Yeah.
Then that helps everybody involved. So
yeah,
I just find it's fascinating just to see this whole thing unfold in real time. A late Mikel Oyarzabal penalty means Real Sociedad win the Copa del Rey, beating Athletic Bilbao 1-0. Jules, Bilbao get another chance in 2 weeks because, of course, this was the 2020 Copa del Rey and the 2021 Copa del Rey will be played soon. But still, never mind that. That post-game press conference from Imanol was something else.
It was something else. It was probably the best thing because the game wasn't that great, to be honest. But Imanol has been a Real Sociedad fan all his life. This is his town. He's played in the youth teams and in the first team, managed the youth teams, and now managing the first team. And for him, I think this title, the first one in 34 years, by the way, he was, I think, 15 when the last won a trophy. For him, this meant so much than just winning a cup, that he got in front of the media and said, just excuse me for a minute, and put a Real Sociedad shirt on, took his scarf out and started singing their one of their songs, like if he was a fan, but he is a fan, and I thought that was wonderful. Well done to him, to his young team. Alexander Ishak is great talent. It's such a nice club and nice story. And to win it in a derby as well is just...
And I think this is what we say when we talk about it means more. All those Muppets who are happening again now with Harry Kane, like, oh, why doesn't Harry Kane want to win things? Show ambition. Don't you want to go win things? Go with... You know what? I'm sorry. If you win something, a place like Real Sociedad or Newcastle or Gladbach or Roma, or Sevilla, it means more. Yeah. It means more. And if you do it when you also have a special tie to the place, and I always bring up Alan Shearer
and
Newcastle, then it means more to you. There's more in life than just being another guy who's won a bunch of trophies at a bunch of team that's already won a bunch of trophies before you got there and will win a bunch of trophies, you know, after you leave.
Yeah, yeah. My boy Theo Hernandez makes a huge mistake, and Milan are held 1-1 by Sampdoria on Saturday. Gab, do we really now have to worry about them finishing in the top four? It's getting close behind.
It's getting close. I don't think you have to worry excessively. This wasn't a great Milan performance. Equally, Sampdoria tough to play against, especially when you gift them a goal.
Yeah.
Your other boy, Frank Kessie, had a chance to win it at the very end. Ibra was quiet. Benacer was quiet. Like, I think they're going to be just fine. I don't think at this stage that they're going to win the Serie A title, which is what we were talking about until recently.
Yeah.
Monaco beat up Metz 4-0, and they're a single point behind Paris Saint-Germain. Jules, you can feel their footsteps behind you, right?
I can hear them, Gab, and they've been really good, even when Tchouaméni, who's maybe their best player this season, Sofian Diop, are not even there. Cesc Fabregas had a good game, Kevin Follin, with some Benitez.
Can you just help this, okay, for the... To help understand, help explain Monaco, because we touched upon this before when we talked about Lille, right? Okay, so I get it. To somebody who doesn't follow this, right? So Tchouaméni and Sofian Diop, we've heard of them, promising players having breakout seasons, right? Okay, fine. And you bring up Cesc Fabregas, who I believe is a couple years older than you are. But okay, the guy sits in the middle of the park, spreads the ball, whatever. Yeah. But then you bring up Kevin Follin, and I think... The hell? Kevin Follin, what?
The Bayer Leverkusen.
No, Kevin I know Follin. Who he is, but it's like a weird thing where like you have people who are kind of trying to relaunch their careers with talented youngsters, with old guys.
Experience.
I get the experience of Fabregas, who played for Arsenal, Chelsea, and Barcelona.
But Kevin Follin had some experience as well, playing in the Champions League, you know, playing in the Bundesliga, for the top four in Bundesliga. You know, we're not talking someone who was a...
But did he become good all of a sudden?
He was good before, you're harsh.
Come on.
He's scoring goals, he's good, he's got the right attitude, a training in games. The thing about them and what makes them special this season is they've got maybe the best squad after PSG, but certainly in terms of numbers, I think even a better squad than PSG. So Kovac can bring on five players.
Wait. Did you say they have a better squad than Paris
Saint-Germain? In terms of numbers, yeah, of course.
Because they have more players.
Yeah, but not just the number, but the depth in the depth of squad. In terms of, you can bring on Ben Yedder, Diop, Fabregas, Golovin, you know, those players, and that's what they've done. That's why they're so good in second halves of games this season, because he makes five changes, brings so much talent in that they usually turn things around or win games if they're not already in the lead. It's great. They're doing a great job. Fantastic.
Can we squeeze in a quick Golovin update? Because I remember when he signed for the club, the excitement, the money. I knew somebody very well who worked for the club at the time. Is he ever going to become the player we thought he was going to be?
Yeah, he's certainly showing some moment of brilliance. He scored a wonderful hat-trick against Nîmes not long ago, but he's very fragile physically, and they have to be very careful.
It's been 3 years now, no?
Yeah, three years. And he had a terrible injury earlier in the season that kept him out almost for 4 months or something. So they're very careful with him, but the talent, you could see the talent is so obvious.
And he's 24, 23?
25 maybe.
25
now this
so he
year.
Could come back.
Yeah, I think he will eventually. Napoli win a wild one against Crotone 4-3. Gab, how huge is their game in midweek against Juventus in that top four race?
So the score looks close, and obviously they were 3-1 up. It got back to 3-3, and then Napoli scored the winner with Di Lorenzo. I love it.
Yeah, you love him. I know you do.
The game's absolutely huge because, but sorry, but I want to make it clear, like,
Napoli dominated, and they made two really stupid defensive errors.
Maximovic.
Again, tall people, when they make mistakes, they look a lot worse. Yeah. Manolas as well, who you don't expect from, since he is the ultimate Greek god who slayed the Barcelona dragon when he was playing for Roma a few years ago, in the great Romantada, as some people like to call it. But this game is huge, and Napoli have all the momentum. Napoli played really well, except for those individual errors. They're firing on all cylinders. They can really give Juve a black eye. Mm. Tell you what, this race of top four, if Napoli get the 3 points, even if they don't, it's just going to be so, so tight.
Yeah.
Jules, I know you love your Techers. Tell me about Daniele Verde's goal for Spezia against Lazio. And look, I know this is a podcast, but I also assume that if you have the intelligence to subscribe and download our podcast, you will very easily find this goal online.
Exactly. And have a look first, before the overhead kick, of the first touch of Emmanuel Gyasi, who's going to then provide the cross, because the ball is coming from long way down, and his touch is perfect. Then the cross. And then the overhead kick, which is sensational, is behind him with his left foot right in the top corner. You could not make him more in the top corner. It's not like a Gareth Bale. It's not a Champions League final, I get that. But it's not a Gareth Bale or when Rooney shinned the ball in. It's the purest overhead kick that you would see this season. So well done, Daniele Verde.
And he hits it so hard, too.
It's a shame that then they lost in the 89th minute to a Caicedo penalty, but...
A very, very dubious penalty. It's one of those silly handballs.
The Mirror are reporting that Manchester United will move David De Gea in the summer, having committed to Dean Henderson as the number one. But Gab, good luck to them to moving him, no?
Yeah, this is one of those bizarro stories. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you might want to, but...
We might want to sell David De Gea, but it is funny. I mean, we've talked about this before. There's a totally different economy for goalkeepers, because there's this group of goalkeepers, because you can't rotate keepers. You can't just say like, oh yeah, you know, when you can, if you're Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
But in real life, it makes no sense paying your backup goalkeeper an enormous amount of money. David De Gea is in that group of goalkeepers who makes an enormous amount of money, and there aren't that many teams who can afford him. So it's the Donnarumma situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great. Yeah, we'll move him on in the summer. Okay, fine. What are you going to do?
Good luck with that.
You know, oh, he can replace Oblak at Atletico Madrid. Fine. Where's Oblak going to go? Man, you know what I mean?
There's like, not many clubs that can afford him. That's true.
It's so limited. And it's going to stay limited until Manuel Neuer decides to retire, if he ever does retire. I mean, I think he's the next older keeper.
You've got Nubel at the club who supposedly or potentially he's the successor.
Yeah, although what
anyway.
We've seen from Nubel.
Yeah, no, I know,
I wouldn't be counting, but...
You got him for that, yeah. So...
Jules, it was Easter weekend, and naturally we saw a photo of Virgil van Dijk with the Easter bunny.
Yeah, I mean, a really tall and strong Easter bunny, clearly.
That was a big dude, because Virgil van Dijk looks like a small child next to him. If you haven't seen this picture, check it out. That's the first thing I noticed. And it didn't look like one of those... You know those weird costumes where you have like the giant head and guy's eyes are actually here?
It's an expensive costume. It's an expensive costume. Clearly, the Van Dijk family, I suspect this is, you know.
Is it they hired somebody or like?
No, they must have bought a really nice costume, and either Virgil's brother or maybe Mrs. Van Dijk. I don't know what Mrs. Van Dijk, if she's tall or I don't know what she looks like. He's clearly in the costume. Okay. I think my children would freak out a bit seeing that.
He's too big.
Too big in the garden. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
If you're the person in Virgil van Dijk's Easter bunny costume, please do get in touch. We're both on social media.
Former Roma owner Jim Palota gave a wide-ranging interview to The Athletic, but I think the part with the 1.5 million Roma-branded size small men's thongs stood out for you, Gab.
Yeah, now, I don't know.
What's going on here?
I know it was a hyperbole. Look, Jim Palota, obviously... He came into the club. He spent a lot of money in the club. He did a lot of really, really good things. Yeah. It's really difficult to run a club in Rome with the expectations, whatever. Wasn't able to build a stadium, all this stuff. But he gave this wide-ranging interview where he hits all of it. It's worth your time, I think. But he wanted to emphasize how Roma's commercial operation was rubbish before he got there. And one of the things he said that, and this is an exaggeration, clearly, but... They had 1.5 million of these men's thongs, small sizes, Roma branded. And he says something like, you know, they burned some, others they sent to Africa as like part of charity. Like, I don't know. I just had the image of like, who would buy this stuff? So again, if you owned a men's small sized
branded thong.
Yeah, Roma branded thong.
Roma branded thong. If you're one of these 1.5 million lucky people, please do get in touch. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Thursday to do this again. The Champions League is back.
Champions!
And until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.